Welcome, dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd printing from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 198 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the robot section, and we're on to step 4, AI programming. This page is for robots who have an artificial intelligence. This is about what that intelligence is programmed to do. First, we discuss robot alignments. As it turns out, robots, in their initial programming, are stuck with just a few alignment options. Principled, scrupulous, and aberrant. These are the more legalistic alignments, which I guess makes sense for a robot. Oddly, you can't have a robot who has a moral code that forbids killing, since this superhero game does not offer a moral alignment that stringent. So bad news if you're into robot ethics. Such exacting moral rubrics as the laws of robotics, or, I don't know, the Ten Commandments, are simply so unrealistically demanding that not even a robot would be programmed with them. Of course, if you have an advanced AI, then you can move on to any of the other alignments in the game from your legalistic starting one. So it's just a little bit of flavor, which I really don't mind. From there, we move on to the interesting part, programming skills into your robot. Each robot gets one skill program, but these aren't the conventional skill programs we saw back in the education section. These are robot AI exclusives, big meaty programs with all like one theme to all the skills you get. And you get them at quite high levels, but they advance slowly, representing that the robot is programmed right from the word go to be really good at these skills, but doesn't improve in them very fast because of the limitations of artificial intelligence. However, as we have noted, other characters really don't advance in skills very fast either, and often start with very low values, especially in certain skills. So while you would think robots would excel at things like repulsor rays and missile launchers, those things are actually only middlingly powerful and so expensive that many characters won't be able to afford them. What robots are really good at is certain hard-to-get skills. So today I have the pleasure of enumerating those skills to you because I'm a robot fan. So if you want to play a robot who's really got a niche, a robot who really can do something no mere flesh and blood mortal could do, let me give you some character creation options that will distinguish your robot from the human competition, things robots are better at than anybody, or at least than the vast majority of other characters. First off, let me wholeheartedly recommend that you play a robot chef. There is a domestic program here. You have a robot who is programmed for domestic chores, like Rosie from the Jetsons. You get computer operation, cook, first aid, pilot automobile, sewing, two more domestic skills of your choice, and some secondary skills with no bonuses, oddly. But we don't care about that. What we care about is that you get cook at 86% at first level. Now, the cook skill for a human being starts at 35%, and then it gains 5% per level. Keep in mind that even if you are a chef with the equivalent of a PhD in your cooking skills, you only get a plus 30% to that skill, which means you top out at 65% as a starting character, you know, barring IQ bonuses or whatever. A robot could have those too. So a robot chef is starting out substantially better, like 21% better at the cooking skill than the best trained human chef. Now the chef is gaining on the robot, learning faster than the robot can. Possibly this has something to do with the fact that the robot cannot taste and, in many cases, has no grasp of human emotions or desires. Nonetheless, with the human chef gaining on the robot at 3% per level, making up that 21% gap is going to take 7 levels. However, by level 7, the robot has maxed out the cooking skill. So the robot remains in the lead until both the human and robot chefs are absolute masters at 7th level. So nobody cooks like a robot. I highly recommend the robot chef character concept. You can build modular knives and mixers and stuff into your hands if you want. I'll also point out that you could have a refrigerated compartment in your own body. I am firmly on the record as loving the spout you can put into your custom super vehicle that shoots out chicken soup from your dashboard. But if there's anything better than that, it's a robot who can make you some chicken soup from scratch, then store it in their heated innards and just shoot it out of their mouth into your bowl whenever you're hungry. That's true luxury. Other things that robots are really good at, probably better at than almost any human, electrical engineering. We talked at length about how it sucks to be a hardware character. Turns out, robots are even better at dunking on hardware characters than random college volleyball players are. With the kinds of bonuses robots get, you could even be a robot engineer, despite the big minus 40 penalty to robot mechanics and electronics, and be a robot who makes other robots. The hardware analytical character is supposed to be really the only character who is good at robot mechanics and electronics. A first-level robot can get within, 3% of being that good at building robots, in addition to being, made of titanium and able to fly and all the other cool shit robots get to do. So if you're thinking about playing a hardware character, don't. Play a robot. Be your own jetpack. Save a step. But robots aren't just good at, technical skills. Also, lots of spy stuff. The intelligence skill. A robot who is programmed for spying starts with intelligence 86%. It is truly amazing the kind of intelligence gathering and analysis you can do when you are a simple AI that is not distracted by things like deductive reasoning, understanding human relationships, conceiving of emotions, doing original problem solving, without those things getting in the way. Truly, a spy robot can cut to the core of a situation and deliver effective intelligence reports. Likewise, prowling, 75%. Robots are real good at sneaking, and you take this espionage program, you get 3 espionage skills of choice at 80%. This is killer for disguise and impersonation. Once again, having a simple AI, it seems limiting in terms of role-playing. Not being able to understand emotions or, have a sense of what human beings are and how they think and social cues, But when you take all that stuff out of the equation, you really, in a Zen sort of way, unlock the robot's ability to really put on some face putty and a mustache and just do spot-on impersonations and improvisational acting as specific people. I mean, if you need to kidnap somebody's daughter and convince her that you are her daughter to secretly grill her for information while living in her home, I would choose a robot who cannot understand the concept of love every time. And the rules bear me out on that. Base chance to impersonate someone if you are a feeble human with feeble human compassion and empathy, 16% at first level. Even if you're a doctor of impersonation, that's a 46%. This robot is starting at 80%. So yeah, robots, perfect spies. But if you really want to be king of the hill in a difficult and respected profession, I would go for the robot writer. Play a robot novelist. A robot who is programmed for social sciences can take any 2 technical or domestic skills at 86%. Writing has a base skill percentage of 25%. That's a whopping 61% advantage that robot writers have over baseline human writers. That is a whopping 31% advantage that robots have over even the best trained human writers. If you are a robot novelist, you will take over the literary world. Nobody can touch you. I mean, how can they? You're too fast. The formula is too perfect. If there's one thing actual bestseller lists have taught us, it's that the ability to quickly produce novel after novel after novel, devoid of any understanding of real human interaction, but a keen ability to reproduce a well-tested formula ad infinitum until you drop dead, that's how people get rich in the literature game. And your robot will be no different. Be Robo James Patterson. Be Robot Dean Koontz. Write 100 books a year. Make people who work in bookstores crazy. Do a decades-long series of books about some NSA agent named Brad that you can read in any order, where every book he visits one U.S. state, bones one lady, catches one criminal, and it might as well be Mad Libs. And never once in those decades of genre literature show the slightest inkling of how a human relationship works. You'll make your millions. You can buy your own sports car. You can live the superhero car ownership fantasy on your own terms with that sweet Brad Radley money. You got to have a catchy name for him. That's the only thing. You might need help from your programmers with that. But once you got that, you just churn them out. Brad Radley in. Priority 1. Brad Radley in. 2 to tango. Brad Radley in. 3rd strike. This one is about a drug dealer doesn't want to go back to jail for life, and so he's on the run and he'll do anything. And it's got a strong political subtext that either Mexicans or all young people or both are very dangerous. Remember that the only men who buy genre fiction are males over 50 who wear their pants too high and vote Republican. Anyway, the dumbest thing on this page is, while I can understand that you want robots to be really good at skills, and I approve of this kind of design where you're not afraid to give a high skill value to a character who should have it according to their concept and the play experience you're shooting for, I think that this page is a little bit indiscriminate in handing out those high bonuses. At the very least, you should have to have an advanced AI that can like understand or come to understand human behavior to have high percentages in things like intelligence, impersonation, art, writing. Because if there's one thing more comic booky, more tropey than a robot who is a genius at mathematics or mechanics or even hand-to-hand combat, it's that the same robot can't paint or whistle or tell a joke. Making robots not only good at those things, but in some cases the best at those things, it's pretty dumb. A major oversight, despite how much I want to play a robot novelist. Today we're discussing page 199 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the robot section. We're just wrapping up the section on robot skills. Yesterday we talked about all the various skill programs robots can have, the things they can be good at. And today we're finishing that up and we're moving on to the robot's background, where they came from, what phase of design they were in when they left or escaped from the facility that created them, etc. Just to quickly wrap up skills, I do want to point out that there is guidance here for creating new skill programs for robots that specify the skill percentages you can get in other kinds of skills that aren't listed here. And just as with yesterday, these percentages are the highest available for certain niche skills. For example, we keep coming back to how difficult ventriloquism is. A robot can start with a 70 or 80% in ventriloquism, which is hugely better than anybody else. So if you're looking to create a ventriloquist for whatever reason, if that's the challenge you've decided to take on after listening to Mega Dumbcast, the robot is the place to go. And there are two skills called out that are difficult for robots to get, streetwise and seduction. If you program a robot for these skills, they, quote, should be a meager 60%, end quote. Meager. Streetwise has a base skill of 20%. Seduction starts at a 20% and only advances by 3% per level. Outside of combining the powers of extraordinary charm and extraordinary beauty with an advanced education in seduction, as for example from a spy agency, a robot is actually the basis of the most effective seduction build, even, once again, if that robot has no concept of human feelings. So even the things robots are bad at, robots are good at, when it comes to skills. When it comes to being a robot, the same does not hold true. And that brings us to background data, step 5 of robot creation. First, you roll for your sponsoring organization. It's much what we've come to expect from these tables. You were created by some kind of agency, whether it was a corporation, the military, etc., etc. Then you roll on another table to find out, do they hate you? Are they hunting you? Do they like you and pay you a lot of money? Did they just build a multi-million dollar robot and then have creative differences and be like, well, why don't you move out into an apartment, killer robot? Maybe we'll call you if we ever want to hang out. It's what you'd expect. Much more pressingly for your play experience, there is a table entitled Quality of the Robot. Only the first result on this table appears on this page, but it is worth talking about because it is the dumbest thing on this page. You have a 20% chance to roll on the Quality of Robot table, quote, experimental model. Laboratory tests unfinished, but field tests have been pushed ahead as the result of budget cuts. 1 to 30% chance of malfunctioning. Roll percentile dice each time a weapon, device, or special function, extra speed, extra limbs, sensors, etc., is used. May work one time and not another. End quote. There's a 20% chance, in other words, that your character is fucking ruined. Because what this would mean is that not only do you have to build this robot on this ridiculous shoestring budget, not only do you have to build a robot on not enough budget to even get yourself your arms and legs that you want, but every time you try to use anything that could be characterized as a power, those claws you put in your left hand because you only had like $30 left in your budget, the extra couple of points that you scrimped and saved for, right? Maybe you're getting by with wheels instead of legs so that you could build your arms up to physical strength 16 so you could be strong. Anytime you try to use that strength, you got to roll percentile, not just once for this feature, mind you, but every time you try to use it, you got to roll percentile, and there's about a 1/3 chance that it fails. Imagine how delightful this will be, not only for you, but for the entire group in combat scenes, when every single one of your turns involves a percentile roll, and 1/3 of the time, your shit breaks down. Let's say you're one of those attack helicopters that was taught simulated boxing, so now you've got 7 or 8 attacks per melee. That means you get to shoot your energy cannon at your foes with your laser targeting pointer 8 times per round. But every time you try to use the laser targeting pointer, you've got to roll a percentile. So every round, you're making, say, 14 distinct percentile rolls Oh, and I'm assuming you're sitting on the ground during all this, right? Because if you built a flying robot, fuck you, buddy. Because every time you try to fly, you got to make a percentile roll, and if you fail it, then you can't get up there. Hey, let me maneuver around underwater with my maneuvering jets. Good luck. 1 in 3 times you try to maneuver, the jet doesn't go off and you just keep drifting in the same direction you were. Extra limbs. My God. Can you imagine playing a character, let's say, a robot dog with an extra, like, humanoid arm coming out of its back so you can, like, open doors and, you know, do normal human stuff so you're not a load for the group? Can you imagine playing a character who every time he tries to use his hand has to roll a percentile to see if his hand doesn't work? Every time, every round of combat, every time he opens a door, every time he pulls a lever or pushes a button. This table continues on to the next page, and while the malfunction chance drops, the need to roll these dice all the time does not. Unless you roll the, I shit you not, 4% chance that you are a fully functional robot, you will have to roll percentile dice before everything you try to do with a special robot feature, just to see if it fails. But at least most of the time, the odds are low. Like, down around the 20 to 10% area. But if you roll a 1 to 20 here, rip your character sheet in half and start over. You're in for nothing but constant frustration, and so is everyone around you. By far the dumbest thing on this page. It's rare that you see a single entry in a table come so close to ruining an entire power category, but here you have it. Absolutely horrible design. It contributes nothing to the game. I can't imagine anyone playing through like a years-long campaign rolling percentile every time they try to do something, with a 1/3 fail chance. Totally ridiculous. Certainly a rule people would ignore, I should think. Or like, do a very early plot event in the campaign where some kindly inventor fixes you up so you don't need to do this shit. But if you know otherwise from your campaigns, by all means, let me know. I would be interested to hear the story of anyone who played this for an extended period of time. Today we're discussing page 200 of Heroes Unlimited, and what better way to celebrate this milestone than a giant fucking scam. Robots beware. You are being hoodwinked. The robot industry is out to get you, and this page is a wonderful example. Here we are, in the robot section. We've just finished all the sort of introductory stuff about this power category, and now, at last, we're at step 6, robot construction, where we start spending our ridiculously low budget to try to build a robot. And we start with selection A, body frames, size, and style. Your basic robot body, just the basic chassis of the robot to come. Obviously, this is one thing you can't do without. You can even do without an AI if you have a pilot, but the robot has to have a body. There's no skipping this step. And prices vary wildly. So here's some options for you, if you're considering what kind of robot you want to be. Let's say you're an AI, right? You're an advanced AI, wondering what it is to be human, thinking about the life you're going to live. You're being given some input in the design decision. So here are your options. You could be shaped like a light motorcycle, have the frame of a light motorcycle. That costs about $2,000. If you're thinking of, you know, teaming up with some other folks, maybe make yourself useful to a team so they'll embrace you in your alienness. You could be a mid-sized sedan shape. That's about $16,000. More expensive, but maybe worth it. And you're getting some value for that, right? Because not only does it allow you to be more of a team player, but you're 14 feet long. You weigh 2,000 pounds. That's a lot of material. But if I know Pinocchio-like AIs, and I think that I do, what you want is to live a human life or some approximation of it. You want to go live in buildings, open doors, drive cars rather than being one, shoot guns, play catch, ride bikes, wear clothes. What you want is a humanoid-style body. Now, a human body is smaller than a mid-sized sedan, only weighs 110 pounds compared to the 2,000 of a mid-sized sedan, but it's going to cost you $500,000. Now, what the fuck is this? I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, but what about the articulation, though? I mean, human arms and legs are so complicated. You know, those limbs, the musculature, everything. No. This doesn't include arms or legs. Those come later. We charge you extra for those in the robot industry. All you get is a helpless, legless torso for $500,000. 500K for no manipulators, just like abs. You know, it can do a crunch. And you're probably out there, you know, apologists for the robot industry saying, but that's muscles. It can flex, you know, it moves. It's got like, it's not like a mid-sized sedan or a light motorcycle. It can flex. It's got moving parts. That's orders of magnitude more. Okay. On the next page, we are offered a canine body style, the limbless torso of a giant dog, a wonderful phrase I would never have said if not for this podcast. It's 12 to 18 feet long. You know what? It's got muscles too. It can move too. It can flex. Costs $240,000. More than a light motorcycle, more than a sedan, but less than half as much as a humanoid torso at twice the size and 20 times the weight. What is so expensive about a human torso? I'll tell you what it is. It has nothing to do with its construction. It's price gouging. It's more expensive because you can't go to the fucking bank and open a checking account when you're a motorcycle. And they know that. These asshole engineers know that. They know you can't go spy on mobsters meeting in a strip club when you're a sedan. They don't let sedans in the strip club. You can't live your life without the semblance of a humanoid body. And that's why, like a sports car frame, complete with doors and factory coating and a hood ornament and everything, costs a tenth of this glorified mannequin chest they're giving you. Just the trunk of a store window dummy. $500,000, please. Because what are you going to do? Live your life as a motorcycle? I don't think so. I say, fuck them. Stick it to them. Be a motorcycle. Just if you want to play a character who is like a robot, you know, scientist or a chef or a novelist like we were talking about, and you see these prices, I think, you know, as a player, I think my choice would be like, fuck that. I'm a chef who's a motorcycle. Well, what's the name? I mean, look, neither the human trunk nor the motorcycle chassis come with arms. I got to buy those separately anyway. So let me be a motorcycle with arms that specializes in French cuisine. It'll be like Ratatouille. I'll have some goober ride on my back. Pretend that he's the chef. People will be like, chef, why do you always bring in your little scooter to work? And my little robot eyes down between the handlebars would just be staring daggers at him like, don't you fucking tell. This is my dream. This is my passion. And he's terrified. He's just like, no reason. Knuckles white on the handlebars as my robot arms are chopping up the carrots. You know, all joking aside, this is a serious, serious budget drain on characters who already don't have enough money. It's especially damaging for like the android type characters who, for the concept to work, you have to be like a regular sized person. You're not going to be this like flesh colored, beard stubbled, you know, facsimile of a human who's also like 20 feet tall or shaped like a fighter jet. You got to have the regular human body. And it's so needlessly expensive for no utility other than being able to live a life. And that also means that the reinforced version of it is correspondingly more expensive. If you wanted to be a character who's really good at punching, as it stands with these rules, you'd be much better off playing a motorcycle with arms because you can reinforce that thing. It only costs you $4,000. You can have two arms hanging off the side of that motorcycle that are just as strong as any arms a humanoid could have, but the motorcycle body can stand up to it. If you try to put that on a human body, it costs you $900,000 to get a human torso that can stand up to that strength. Literally over 100 times as much money to reinforce that body as it is to reinforce a motorcycle. And when you've got a $9 million budget, you cannot spend almost a million of it on just your chest. It's not just silly dumb, it's bad for the game. So a clear winner on this page. In your game, you could cut these to a tenth and you'd be better off for it. Today we're discussing page 201 of Heroes Unlimited, and am I ever excited, Bargain Hunters, because yesterday, I got a little worked up about the inexcusable price gouging involved with robot construction, overcharging people for the limbless human trunks they need to build a robot who can live a normal life. I think we got beyond that. I think we realized that there are other options than playing a humanoid robot. And today I want to talk about some of the very cheapest options where you can still, if you're willing to accept a little bit of a wonkiness, you can still have a very normal robot life despite looking nothing like a human being. You've got to be a canny shopper. You can see that actually with a couple of body types on this page. Compare, there is a jet aircraft style body. Quote, resembles a modern fighter jet, although it may not fly or function like a jet at all. So you get no engines. It's just the body of a fighter jet, right? 30 to 35 feet long, weighs about 12 tons. It's a vehicle type and it seats one or two, and you can add more seats if you want for a little extra money, up to a total of 5 or 6 seats. It weighs 12 tons and it costs $690,000. But there's no reason to take this. Because if you go over to the geometric body styles category, which is also on this page, you'll find cylindrical style. Quote, a long and tubular style, a little double meaning here because this is not only tube-shaped, but also tubular as in totally radical, similar to a submarine or aircraft. That's right, a cylindrical body similar to an aircraft. like an airplane, like perhaps a jet airplane. This thing is 12 to 14 feet long if you get a little one, or 18 to 24 feet long if you get a big one. Only a 6 foot difference between the largest generic cylinder bodies and the smallest of the jet aircraft bodies. The cylinder, though, weighs a lot less, and it seats, in its large size, 4, 8, 12, or 16 people. It comes with 6 standard. That's the maximum for the jet aircraft, and extra seats above that cost less than extra seats on a jet aircraft body. If you want a body shaped like an airplane, I would go for the cylindrical body, because it only costs $12,000, less than a 50th of the cost of the jet fighter body. For almost the same size, more seating, it's really a steal. You just need to know where to look. You got to be a sophisticated shopper. And that brings us to the dumbest thing on this page, and yet, ironically, the best bargain option, in many cases, for your robot, especially if you're on a very low budget. If you're at that $9.5 million mark, you got to make every dollar count. I would opt for the spherical body. Quote, a round ball shape, or half ball shape, or elliptical. I mean, obviously, it's a very different play experience playing a ball versus an oval, so whatever you want, you call the tune. In any case, these things are 6 to 10 feet across, 12 to 20 if you go with the bigger option, weigh anywhere from 500 to 1,500 pounds depending on size. The little ones seat up to 8 people inside, the large ones seat up to 12 people inside, but let's say you want to play it tight, you want to save that money, you resolve to play a small ball, only cost $8,000. This is the third cheapest body after the two motorcycle bodies, but it may end up being cheaper than them, and I'll tell you why. You got to think holistically about your whole robot design when you're shopping for robots on a budget. A motorcycle body is great, nice and cheap. The problem, though, is it's really designed to have wheels, and if it's got wheels, then it needs a propulsion system. That's going to start to get pricey, because the standard propulsion systems, like, you know, standard motorcycle wheels, those require liquid fuel, and liquid fuel has exhaust. It's not going to let you live your life. You're going to end up really being a motorcycle, not just being motorcycle shaped. This raises all kinds of problems for like operating indoors. You aren't going to be able to really get value out of your robot life. You're going to be somebody else's vehicle. That's not what you want. It's almost as cheap and much more versatile, rather than having a liquid fuel system, to have some other form of power supply, which means wheels won't work, which means you really need legs. Now, some of these body types, including motorcycles, if you modify how the body works, there's an extra charge. That's how they get you. So, for example, if you were to modify a motorcycle to have legs, you might incur the original body design charge of $30,000 on top of the $2,000 base cost for a light motorcycle. So instead of $2,000, we're now paying $32,000, because instead of having two wheels at the bottom, we're playing a motorcycle that's got a row of inline legs at the bottom. First of all, that's horrifying. Secondly, it's expensive. You're obliterating the savings. Much better, you know, don't be penny wise, pound foolish here. Take the sphere. The sphere, it's a nice simple design, can have wheels or legs, whatever you want. Just put a couple of legs on that bad boy. Some arms if you need them. You're going to look like Pac-Man from the old Pac-Man cartoon, or Miss Pac-Man, optional bow. If you're on a tight budget, you want this spherical shape. The other big advantage is that people can get inside the robot. This means you can make a piloted robot that has, you know, a devil may care sports car driving hotshot pilot who's a cool character in his own right, and then for battle he jumps into this Pac-Man mecha. Or you could have an AI and then put the rest of the party in there. Another advantage over a motorcycle: people don't have to blow all the way through your motorcycle SDC to get to the people on the motorcycle. But if you're a complete sphere, if you're a small ball, your foes will have to blow through your, I don't know, at least 600 SDC, maybe as much as 1600 SDC, before they can get to the party members inside. You've also got options on power supply. If you play a big ball instead of a small ball, that's big enough to have the regular fusion generator, so you don't need to spring for that micro fusion generator that's so expensive. But here's what I recommend if you really want to play a budget robot who gets to live life to the fullest. You're not going to pass, but that's not what we're shooting for here. We're shooting for minimum money spent for a life of robot joy. I would recommend, I keep throwing out lately these builds, these character concepts. I hope that you're snatching these up. I hope you're trying them out in your games at home. Play a robot snow cone vendor who is his own snow shack. He's a small ball. He has a refrigerated compartment inside that is an option we'll find later. This is where he keeps the snow cones and snow cone supplies. He may need two compartments. Give this ball a couple of legs, a pair of utility arms, and a little window to reach inside himself, make a snow cone, present it to the delighted child who's standing in front of him, and power supply, solar power, because you only sell snow cones in the summer when it's sunny out. That's his job, his life, and his passion. He doesn't even need to be conscious, let alone active, at night. That's not his calling. Winter, you know what? Pack it in. Buy a tarp. I mean, look, we're shopping for bargains here. If option one is buy a microfusion power generator to put in your humanoid chest, like you're fucking made of money, so you can just lollygag around all the live long year, that's option A. Option B is buy a tarp to park yourself under when it's winter, and then come out when you're surrounded by sunshine and happy children again. Buy the tarp. You know, maybe go chill out in a storage unit during the winter with your earnings. You don't need to eat. Save it up. While not technically a superhero build, not technically a crime fighter, I think that this snow cone vendor small ball with legs is a very affordable option. And if you could just convince the rest of the group to really, you know, reorient the campaign to a summertime snow cone focus, then you can have a lot of fun and make a lot of child NPCs happy, spring for the advanced artificial intelligence who can learn and come to understand human emotions, and really have what I would characterize as a very well-rounded character. As I say this, like a cold sweat comes over me, like, I did this shit to them just days ago. I ended with the worst of puns. Are they going to abandon me this time? Am I over my quota? No more for a while, okay? Today, we're discussing page 202 of Heroes Unlimited. My choice of beverage is different today from what it normally is. Normally, I'm sitting here with some coffee. I'm taking sips, making mouth noises that I sometimes remember to edit out. And I'm being as much of a grown-up as you can be while podcasting about Palladium role-playing games. But today, I just couldn't do it. Today, I'm drinking juice instead because I'm thinking about my childhood. I'm reflecting on the days when this game had not yet been ruined for me by me over the course of this podcast. Because today, we're talking about a loss of innocence, a terrible realization. You see, I used to love the robotics section, which is what we're in the middle of. Many were the afternoons when I would lay on my living room floor with a stack of blank character sheets that I cannot now remember how I possibly could have acquired. I don't believe we had a printer at this time. And I would make robot after robot after robot. I would fill pieces of binder paper with all the math involved in this process, rolling for a budget, looking up costs, pinching pennies, cutting corners, finding synergies. I just ate it up. It made me feel like a real smart kid figuring out how to make a robot because I believed in the integrity of the system. Not everything was perfect. For example, on today's page, we find the power supply rules, which we've talked about on the podcast before. The microfusion power generator is vastly too expensive. It's the power supply that most robots will need. Even as a child, I recognized this was a problem. But I thought of it as a simple mistake. And it is. You know, that's the reason why we're not spending today talking about it, because we've addressed this on the podcast before. The microfusion power generator is too expensive, and you need one. Your budget is too low to accommodate it. Even I cannot spin that into a complete episode. JK, it's what I'm doing right now. But what I didn't realize as a child, and what I realize only now as I kind of put together all the pieces in this section, is that it's not just the generator. The costs in this section, in the robotics section, are essentially arbitrary. They're nonsense. They have no bearing on how useful something is, you know, how quote-unquote realistically expensive it would be, how things synergize, what advantage different things can give you. The prices might as well be created by a random number generator. It's total nonsense. And that's why there are absurd kinds of robots who are absurdly easy to create and play in this game, and perfectly reasonable robot concepts that just can't be done effectively, especially not on a standard budget. Now, obviously, the dumbest thing on this page has to be the price of the microfusion power generator. The pricing of this thing at $5.3 million of your like $9 to $13 million budget is such an outrageous mistake that it was even corrected in later Palladium books. When Palladium fixes a mistake, you know it's bad. But that's symptomatic of a larger thing I want to talk about, a dumb theme permeating this section, which is that the arbitrary pricing of all these different components tends to drift your initial idea for what you want for your robot into something much stranger and more hodgepodge. The same strange financial forces that make the spherical robot an inviting option likewise tend to, you know, just subtly push you into weirdness throughout your journey through the robot section. Let me give you an example of this. Let me give you some numbers to back it up, just from things on this page. Let's take a simple concept, an android, a life-size robot dog. I want an android, but I don't want the angst. So fuck a human android. I want a little doggy android who, as far as he knows, you know, this is just what being a dog is. Beyond this, I make no special demands. Now, he's a crime fighter, so we want him to be like very fast or very strong or have some kind of a weapon built in or something, but that's all flexible. The basic concept is a little android dog who looks like a dog and does doggy things. So, all right, this page contains the tail end of the robot body selection. First thing we need is one small lifelike animal body. That's 20 to 48 inches in length, and we want it reinforced. Because whether it's going to be strong or fast or have a missile launcher in it or whatever, it's going to need to be reinforced to really do anything interesting. So a reinforced doggy body, that is $225,000, 1.5 to 4 feet long. What's interesting about this is that the previous page offers a 12 to 18 foot giant dog body in case you want to ride around like a Power Rangers style doggy Zord. Reinforce that thing, only $290,000, a minimal difference. However, I can sort of understand that because although one of them is about 2 feet long and the other one is 18 feet long, you know, a big and a small robot, good for different things. And being gigantic gets you very little in this section. It raises your maximum physical strength and you start with more SDC and you can hold more giant weapons. But honestly, the budgets are so tight, a lot of that stuff's not really going to be an issue. So being giant, a relatively minor advantage for a robot. So we're going to pay $225 for the standard issue small dog. Immediately, next step, you got to pick out a power supply. And there are only 4 on offer. That's what takes up most of this page. You can immediately cross off the list the fusion power system. You know, the big pro of the fusion power system is that you don't need to worry about it and you get to just be a cool robot and spend your time playing your character instead of worrying about running out of power all the time. But the big con is that it is only appropriate for robots who are 16 feet or bigger. So we can't have the fusion power generator that costs $3.2 million. Are there any other options but the overpriced microfusion power generator? Well, there's liquid fuel, but the rules say that that is inappropriate for an android because it involves an exhaust system. I don't know exactly why the game draws the line here. Like, you can be an android with wheels if you want. The rules don't care. But for some reason, a tailpipe is beyond the pale. But let's say we were willing to fudge it even and say that this can be a little gasoline-powered doggy. I don't really know how this would work. How often do you need a refill? Like, there's no guidance. I don't know what kind of mileage a small dog gets. And how does this even work? Like, if I'm just, you know, laying there and my little paws are twitching and I'm having an android dream about chasing a rabbit, is that, am I idling? Or, like, how does my AI run on gasoline? Anyway, rules as written, it can't be done. And even if we were willing to bend the rules, I'm not sure how it would work. And thirdly and finally, a small dog just does not have the fuel capacity to support their own active lifestyle. So liquid fuel is a no-go. The only other option is solar power. This you can get for a small robot, but it costs $1 million and the total power supply, reserve and emergency and everything, the total power in the robot is 12 hours. Now, those of you who don't live directly on the equator may be familiar with a thing called winter. In winter, the nights are long. This is a basic, universal fact of life on Earth, but not one that the robot engineers of Heroes Unlimited were apparently familiar with because they failed to reckon with the fact that a 12-hour power capacity is not enough to get through the night in winter most places in the world. There just aren't enough hours of sunlight in the day to keep your robot from dying in the winter. You have a couple of options to avoid winter-related robot death. For example, the rules suggest that after your reserve power has run out, you can, quote, manually recharge from another source of electrical energy. The rules also offer, for an additional $1 million, a generator which weighs 6 tons and is 5 times the size of a refrigerator. Now, I don't know whether you're allowed to just sort of plug into a wall outlet or what. It says recharge from another source of electrical energy, but if you could use just any old outlet, I don't see why anyone would buy a $1 million generator that's non-portable. But in any case, this doesn't really fit in with a crime-fighting lifestyle anyway. I guess the generator is supposed to be for, you know, if you're going to be out adventuring all night and you want to be able to, like, recharge, get a pick-me-up. But you keep the generator in your house. It's 5 times the size of a refrigerator. So it's really only useful if I'm, like, home in time for doggy bedtime to plug into the generator, and if I'm going to be home in time for doggy bedtime, I don't need a generator, do I? I could just power down. I need the generator if I'm going to be up pulling an all-nighter, you know, staking out a crooked pet shop, fighting on-brand crime like you do. I need power in a scenario where I have to be out at night, and if I'm going to be doing an all-night stakeout, I can't very well take my fucking 6-ton generator with me. So the generator's not doing much for me. And this is assuming that I'm deciding where and when I'll go on adventures. If somebody ties up this poor dog, you know, mistakes him for a mutant, and ties him up with rope, and he can't get home at night, what's he supposed to do then? You know, what happens if this is a D&D situation where we're in some kind of underground structure, and, you know, I'm adventuring with a wizard and he runs out of spells, so we all gotta stop and take a nap? Like we're in kindergarten for murderers, we gotta kill, 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 nap, kill, kill, kill. I could be out all night, underground, where no sun can get to me. I'm going to die. So you've got an affordable but unworkable system at $1 million, and then an additional option for an additional $1 million that's of minimal usefulness. No option for a bigger battery. I mean, you know, 8 more hours of power? This would be honestly perfectly viable. Long enough to get through a night from one day to the next seems like a pretty solid design spec for a solar-powered robot. You know, you might be in trouble if somebody stuffs you in a closet and keeps you there for an extended period, but it doesn't seem like too much to ask to just get from sunset to sunup without dying completely. So that only leaves the microfusion power generator. $5.3 million. It solves my problem. It allows me to do all I want to do, which is to be a little robot dog and not die every night, not have to have a fucking attached external gas tank and have to go to the gas station to keep being a dog. Just be a dog. $5.3 million. I guess as a balancing factor, despite the fact that, you know, I hasten to point out, all I get from this is the ability to just function. Like, if this were the mutant animal section, I mean, that section charges you BioE for everything. You got to pay for your teeth, you got to pay for your sense of smell, but at least you don't have to pay half of your total BioE to just live through the night, you know? For 30 BioE, when you go to sleep, you wake up. The idea that not needing constant refueling needs to be power balanced is ludicrous. And again, look at the other options on this page, though, and you can see this is not like a one-off mistake. Look at legs. The legs section begins here. Okay, well, what would we buy for this little dog? You can get a pair of human legs for $500,000. They have a speed of 10. Obviously, that would be very creepy on a dog. Let's pass on that. Giant-sized human legs. Same speed, despite having twice the stride. But they cost more, like twice as much, for no benefit. Go figure. Then at last, we arrive at the animal legs, certainly the obvious choice to put on a dog. These come in sets of 4. They go small, medium, large. It says that small is like a bird and large is like a horse, so I guess dog is medium. The price ranges from $350,000 for 4 small legs to $1 million for 4 large animal legs. That's almost 3 times the cost for large versus small. Same speed, no difference. We're just making shit up and randomly putting prices on it. And it's not like the requirements, what you can put on your body. Like, if I want this dog to be a dachshund, maybe I can get small legs. Save some money. Why not? Same speed, same everything. Or there are giant walker-type animal legs. I don't know what animal means in this context, because these seem like big, like, daddy long legs. But anyway, they're twice as fast as the other legs. They cost $2 million, and they're giant. So they cost $800,000 more than giant human legs, but you get 4 instead of 2, and they're twice as fast. Insect legs, 4 for $600,000, 6 for $750,000, 8 for $1.2 million. I don't know why, other than a pedantic respect for arachnid anatomy, you would opt for 8 legs when it makes no difference and cost twice as much as 4. But yeah, they're twice as fast as normal human or animal legs. These are spider legs. The walker legs are spider legs, but these are a quarter of the price. I guess because they're not explicitly giant, although the size isn't specified. And anyway, who says all these sizes need to match? It says here about the giant walker legs, quote, usually long, narrow, telescoping legs. If I can make them shaped like dog legs, that's twice as fast as dog legs at the same price. But even though the insect legs are faster, they have a lower speed cap of 225 miles per hour, which, by the way, has nothing to do with body size or leg size. So the maximum speed you can run is the same for a life-size robot chihuahua as it is for an 18-foot-long robot greyhound, unless one of them has robot spider legs, in which case that one is twice as fast. unless they both bought up their speed to the max, in which case the one with spider legs is slower. And the prices reflect none of this. They're not the same, mind you. They're just set at random different levels. Speaking of prices at random levels, this little lifelike dog is really adding up, because the microfusion power generator costs $5.3 million. It costs $225,000 for the body. The animal legs are costing me another $500,000. We're already up over $6 million, and I haven't even started to buy any like useful features for this robot. You throw in a decent AI, that's already the whole budget, if I rolled badly for budget. And we haven't even bought like skin and fur for this dog yet, let alone any kind of crime-fighting stuff. So obviously we have to abandon this concept. What is affordable, according to these rules? And this is like the honorary dumbest thing in this page, because it shows how the fucked up pricing results in fucked up robots. What would be a lot more affordable, actually, is to do a giant dog, an 18-foot long dog. Instead of dog legs, give it four giant spider legs, make it solar powered, but then inside where the crew compartment is, replace that with a bunch of auxiliary fuel tanks and give it a backup internal combustion engine. Solar plus liquid fuel is still cheaper than a fusion generator, and with hybrid power, I don't need to worry about dying during the night. The bigger size supports more fuel capacity. So yeah, a near 20-foot spider dog with solar panels who needs to go to the gas station before bed every night, that's very doable, very affordable, very effective, twice as fast as a realistic little dog. As a giant robot, naturally, you get more SDC. Basically, you've created a horrifying canine tank, but at least you're not a realistic schnauzer who can live through the winter. Obviously, you know, that would be OP. Gotta keep players under control. Anyway, analyzing this build, very honestly, was the breaking point for me when I realized this section does not make any goddamn sense. If you enjoy manipulating numbers for its own sake, and, you know, seeking out bizarre exploits in this nonsensical system, by all means, have at it. Certainly, that is its own kind of fun. But the idea that these prices have anything to do with, like, power level or game balance or realism, no, they're absolute nonsense. Just an excuse to do some pointless math. And honestly, most of these menus of robot options would better serve your campaign and game balance if you just ignored the prices and told the player, pick one. Certainly your game will include more lifelike dog bots, which is all to the better. Today we're discussing page 203 of Heroes Unlimited. We are in the robot section, and today we're discussing vehicular locomotion. Not every robot is a giant humanoid mecha or a small lifelike dog who is inexplicably expensive, or a sphere who sells snow cones. All of these builds really come from trying to game this system to try to create a workable robot out of a pitiful budget. But there's a simpler way, which is just to say, you know I picked the robot category, but fuck a robot, let me just play a car. Just like a motorcycle or a car or a boat, I play a guy who drives the boat or the car or whatever. Don't need to worry about AI. Don't need to worry about, like, what size and style of leg do I want. I'll just be nice boatman. If only it were that simple. I regret to inform you that nothing can be that easy. Not in this bitch of a world. Even if you're not buying yourself any legs, you've still got to buy something from this menu here, engines and propulsion systems. Now, these propulsion systems are mostly geared toward vehicular robots, which means that they're skewed a little more toward the assumption that you're using liquid fuel. The first three options, the fuel-injected engine, the turbo engine, and the turbojet engine, all require a liquid fuel system. This is bad news because the liquid fuel system is just not a good option. You know, it's maybe okay as a backup, but having to go refuel constantly, I mean, think about auto racing, right? If you're fighting crime in a vehicle and everything is powered by gasoline, right? Your arm chainsaw, your combat computer, your laser guns, all of them depend upon a power system that is basically dependent on liquid fuel. Think of the pit stops. It's just impractical. And if you do elect to go for solar power or a fusion generator, these first three options, fuel injected engine, turbo engine, and turbojet engine, are off limits. And it's just as well, really. They're hard to parse. Like, they give mileage, but the mileage has no connection to size or weight. So, like, fuel injected engine, 40 miles to a gallon. There's my answer to my question from yesterday of what's the mileage on a small dog? Apparently, a lifelike robot dachshund can run 40 miles on 1 gallon of fuel, just the same as, for example, a 50-foot tall mecha that has a liquid fuel system. 40 miles, 1 gallon. So the rules are weird. It's not that much fun. It requires you to use liquid fuel. Who has time for it? We're more interested in the other possible propulsion systems on this page, which not only are more flexible, they'll work with other power supplies, but they're possibly usable by other kinds of robots, which is where you can really have some fun. We got some hover jet systems. You can use these for like hover bikes or hover tanks. They work underwater and in outer space. You can get a hover backpack for your humanoid character. We got some jump jets. These are all really fun options. They make your robot nice and mobile. And you can like conceal them in little compartments in your Android or whatever. I do appreciate the attention to detail to allowing like a big, impressive, obvious option for like exoskeletons and droid style robots. And then also offering a concealed like cool reveal package for when you want to play somebody who looks like a regular person, but then they jump into action and little like glowing vents open up in their back. And there's like a hum of hover jets engaging and they float into the air. That's really cool. So I'm a fan of these hover jets. However, they don't take the prize for my favorite and the dumbest thing on this page. There's one kind of robot they're not great for. Giant robots. Giant robots, it's very expensive to buy them hover jets. Likewise, robots that are very sophisticated and expensive, that don't run on liquid fuel, they can't have the cheaper options like the fuel-injected engine. So you're really getting burned at both ends as your robot gets cooler and bigger. The hover jets are too expensive. The cheaper basic engines no longer work because you don't use liquid fuel. That leaves one wonderful option in the middle, the concealed helicopter VTOL system. Quote, this is a flight propulsion system based on the helicopter. Rotor blades are folded in a hidden compartment that rise out and unfold when flight is required. Suitable for any robot type except Android. This costs $340,000 straight up. Doesn't get more expensive when you've got a bigger robot. I mean, I guess the potential collateral damage is higher when we're talking about, you know, helicopter blades big enough to suspend a 50-foot robot. But who cares? Like, obviously, who cares about the people around you if you elected to pilot a 50-foot robot? Mechas are for unrepentant narcissists. How can the world's problems be solved? I know. A 10x scale monument to me, crafted in my image, that uses the equivalent resources of an entire police department and just stomps the shit out of municipal property. Thumbs up. The reason we know that mechas won't work in real life is because if they would, Elon Musk would have one. Anyway, back to Heroes Unlimited. Whatever size robot you are, whatever style robot you are, you can have just like a little rotor that slowly shoots out of your head, and then the blades fold out, and then they start spinning, and then you grab onto the handles, and you just, like magic, helicopter yourself away to your destination. Like Inspector Gadget, which is my only complaint about these helicopter blades, is that they are allegedly inappropriate for an Android. Come on now. There is no way you can tell me that the idea for these helicopter blades did not come from Inspector Gadget. They're most useful and most funny on a lifelike robot, and disallowing them seems like a killjoy move. But it's easy enough to hand wave. I mean, what GM is going to look you in the eyes and say, no, your lifelike human or dog android cannot have extendable helicopter blades? Please take a moment to imagine a little corgi, an android, a little helicopter rotor and blades pop up right out the top of its little head between the ears, start spinning, and that corgi is lifted up into the air as though it's being held up under the shoulders. It just hovers there in the air, and then it flies away, helicopter style, smiling, because why wouldn't it be? I don't want to live in a world where that's not an option. But, you know, other than that little niggling point that androids need to be able to use this too, it's such a solid choice. It's the dumbest thing on this page, but I love it. I mean, it's at last a glimpse of the fun of comic book robots. These gadgets don't need to make sense. You know, I didn't pick a robot because I wanted to worry about mileage. I picked a robot because I wanted goofy shit to unfold out of my body and help me beat bad guys. And that's what the concealed helicopter system is. I love it. More dumb shit, please. Speaking of dumb shit that can come out of your robot body, how about a whole other robot? Join me tomorrow to find out how on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That's ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Art of Escapism, whose work you can find at soundcloud.com/artofescapism. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.